again, everybody. It is time for the Mainland Podcast, episode number 122. I'm Michael Citro. I'm the founder and managing editor of themainland.com, and joining me to discuss win number 4 in a row for Orlando City and win number 1 of the season for the Orlando Pride from Tallahassee, Florida, ladies and gentlemen, David Rowe.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Dave, winning never gets old, I can tell you that.
No, we should keep doing this. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, this is a good thing, and it should always be done. Yes. Orlando City, of course, fourth straight victory. The San Jose Earthquakes come in to Orlando City Stadium, and they leave with a 3-2 loss hanging around their necks. It was the first decision in the series after 4 tries. We had 3 draws in the first 3 meetings, and this one finally a winner between the two sides, and the fourth different stadium that these two teams have competed against each other in.
Indeed.
After going to Levi's Stadium, the Citrus Bowl / Camping World Stadium, and Avaya Stadium, they have now played in Orlando City Stadium. So, as I told the communications team for Orlando City, you're going to have to find a venue for next year for this road show where they never seem to want to play in the same place twice.
Yeah, well, and since it's going to be on the road, I'm good with that. Let's keep that little streak going. But next season or the next time we play them at home, let's do it in Orlando City Stadium again, because it worked out well this time.
Sure. It absolutely did. And in fact, you know, it was 3-2, but it wasn't a close game. I mean, San Jose got a couple late set-piece goals to make the score cosmetically more flattering for the visitors. But honestly, Orlando City could have scored 6 or 7 goals in this game, Dave. It was there was a missed penalty. There were several other opportunities to score where, you know, sort of an odd man rush kind of went awry somehow. In a couple of those situations, I'm still not even sure what happened. I just was waiting for the ball to go in the net, and suddenly it was a goal kick or something. I'm like, what? What? How did they not score there? So, but again, Orlando City came out of the gate in pretty good shape. They get a goal from, of course, Chris Mueller, just 2 minutes into the game. In fact, just 63 seconds into the game. Chris Mueller with the fastest goal for Orlando City since the club joined Major League Soccer. Just 63 seconds to get on the scoreboard for the rookie. His third goal in 3 games, I should say, if I could actually speak like a person. And Cash Mueller living up to his nickname, Dave.
You know, I can't remember if it was on the podcast or an article that I wrote. I said, once this kid scores, the floodgates are going to open, and I think he's going to get a lot more. And look where we are. 3 goals, 3 games. He is absolutely feeling it right now. And he could have had a brace, but we'll get to that in a little bit. But, 63 seconds in, and he just – you can – he does a excellent job of keeping his head up and looking to make the best move. I mean, especially given that he's a rookie. And that was not an easy angle that he hit that goal on either.
No, it wasn't. Just a phenomenal cross-pitch long ball from Yoshimaru Yotun to find Chris Mueller in stride on the right flank. And he had to muscle his way past Shea Salinas playing left fullback for San Jose. And he did that, and Salinas went to the ground, and Mueller turned the corner, went into the box. He had some players running in there, and that kind of kept any other defenders from being able to collapse on him. And since nobody did, he just put it in the upper left corner of the net from, like you said, a pretty severe angle, but just an amazing shot and the kind of thing you'd like to see from a goal scorer.
Yeah, he's been exactly what I hoped he would be, and I'm incredibly happy for him. He didn't even do anything that magical as a celebration on that goal either. I mean, he did the little cash thing, but actually I think some of the other guys came up behind him and they were doing the cash symbol. you can see how much his teammates are appreciating what this kid is doing. And it's it couldn't get off to a better start than that. You know, you've barely sat down at the stadium or on your couch at home. You're haven't even had your first little bit of snack or your first, you know, drink of beer, and all of a sudden we're up 1-0.
It was pretty amazing. I mean, it was a great start, a dream start, as they usually say. And the ball from Yotun cannot be underestimated in any way, shape, or form. Just a tremendous, tremendous long ball that you couldn't have dropped it on his foot any better than that. It was just amazing from Yoshi, and it really did set the tone early. Orlando City was able to double the lead through Sasha Kljestan, and again, another similar play, this time a little bit closer in, but it started with Dwyer with some good hold-up play. He dropped off to Yotun. Yotun again goes across the field to Mueller. Mueller breaks in, basically has one defender to beat, beats him, keeper comes out. He can shoot it, but he doesn't. He just slides it toward the net, and he lets Sasha Kljestan run onto it, or slide onto it, as the case was, and tap it in to make it 2-0. And that was a very unselfish move by Mueller. In fact, his first MLS assist, first goal in the run of play for Kljestan as an Orlando City player. And as Kljestan said after the game, if he would have shot and missed, I probably would have killed him. but he, you know, everybody that has seen Mueller play this year knows that he is he's got a maturity level about him and a soccer IQ about him that really is something more than what you typically see out of a rookie, number one. And number two, he's got an energy level that he brings to the game that you also don't see out of rookies very often. Just really watching him play makes everybody else play harder, and watching him and Dom Dwyer both play has got to fire everyone on the field up.
He is incredibly energizing. He's energizing to me as a fan. I love watching this kid. That pass play, so that Kljestan could, like you said, slide that ball into the goal, was the right decision. It was a mature decision. And I don't think we should actually be surprised about this. He was a, you know, assist leader in college. Mm-hmm. This is nothing new to him. He, in college, that's what he did. I mean, he scored goals, but he, like I said, he always has his head up looking around. Like you said, his soccer IQ is very high for a rookie. And, you know, some people were, oh, wow, that was a really mature decision. Well, yeah, I think that that's what he does. I actually think he would have probably done that more if Dom Dwyer hadn't told him, hey, when you get in the box, shoot. So I think he's maybe taken some, you know, I think, you know, Dom's having a good influence on him in that respect, but he still has that natural ability to, you know, look for the better option and make that better pass. So mm-hmm. It doesn't surprise me at all that he did that. And fortunately, Sasha didn't have to kill him.
Yeah, so somebody asked Sasha after the game in the scrum, you know, as the assist leader, is that something that you've kind of taken him under your wing and taught him? And Kljestan was quick to point out, look, this kid led the NCAA in assists last year. I don't have to teach him to pass the ball. He knows how to do
right.
it. So he was quick to defend, you know, Mueller as being a smart player that he didn't have to babysit or take under his wing or any of that kind of stuff. He said, you know, most young kids would have just taken the shot, but you know, he's beyond most kids that age. He's really a smart player. He understands the game. He understands how the best percentage play to make in any given situation. And, you know, sure, he's not going to be perfect. He's going to make mistakes. He's going to miss a read or maybe not see somebody out there. But, you know, he definitely is aware of what's going on. Somebody, you know, when we ask Chris, you know, if he knew Sasha was coming, he goes, oh yeah, I heard him. So it was clear that his teammates were out there talking to him, and he was aware. He didn't get that tunnel vision in the big eyes when he saw the sight of goal. He still understood what was going on around him. It's good to see, and I'm really anxious to see how long he can keep this going, and if he can avoid hitting that proverbial rookie wall that a lot of rookies hit after, you know, 15 games or so. With the more grueling schedule of Major League Soccer. But 2-0 after the Kljestan goal. And again, another beautiful pass from Yotun. And then you know, toward the end of the half is when you started to see some of those chances to put the game, to really put the game away, go wanting, and in fact it made for some nervy moments late. But there were some other opportunities with odd man rushes that didn't quite work out. There was a Yotun one on one with the defender, and all he had to do was try to get something on net, and he tried to make one extra move behind the defender and lost the ball. So there were a couple opportunities, but it was 2-0 at the half, and it really didn't feel like a close game. It really felt like, it always felt like Orlando City was going to go on and score 3, 4, 5 goals and really dominate the game. But after the half, they came out again, and it was Justin Merrum eventually coming on and putting a through ball through the two defenders in a hole that, quite honestly, yes, it was a great pass. It was a good read. It was perfectly weighted. But, I mean, you and I could have gotten our vehicles and side-by-side drove through those two center backs and not right. even worried them at all. I mean, it was a huge gaping hole. As much as I want to give Orlando City credit for this win, I have to say that San Jose did not play a very good game defensively at all. They were pretty much what we expected in terms of pressing high and trying to win the ball, and their attackers are very dangerous players, but you know, you didn't really get a sense of that. You just got a sense of eventually Orlando City is going to win the ball, turn it around quickly, and they're going to be in a lot of trouble, because that's what kind of happened all night. Anyway, Dom Dwyer decided that's when he wanted to score, because he did, and he made it 3-0, and he made it 5 goals, Dave, in 4 games since coming back from injury.
Dwyer, we talk about Mueller and how awesome he's been, at, you know, with 3 goals in 3 games. But then, like you said, 5-4 for Dom. He's, you know, maybe Mueller being out there is helping get guys off the ball for Dom. Maybe it's just that he's feeling it. I don't know. I don't care. As long as these guys keep scoring goals, and we know Dom scores when he wants. So that one, it was utterly fantastic. And the key, I think, and we've mentioned it a couple times without mentioning it, is they're getting service in from the midfield. You know, Yotun is getting balls in. Merrim's getting balls in. So these guys who are scoring these goals, they're getting the opportunities because of that engine coming, you know, feeding that ball into them, and giving them those opportunities. That's incredibly important. I also think that you're right. There was at no point, you know, were you even worried about whether Orlando would get the ball and have an opportunity to score. There was so many opportunities. It really should have been way, way more goals than what we ended up with.
Yeah, once it got to 2, I really wasn't concerned. It just never seemed like San Jose got a toehold in the game at all. They eventually did make it 3-1 on a set piece. A corner kick was a pretty much a free header for Wondolowski, who hit the right post. Well, actually, it was pushed onto the right post, or left post if you're Joe Bendick, by Bendick. He made a nice save to get a hand on it, push it off the post. Unfortunately, it deflected right out in the middle in front of the goal to Florian Jungwirth, who just kicked it in the net. I mean, basically bundled it in and made it 3-1. But again, it just felt like it was so much against the run of play. And it wasn't too worrying, and especially wasn't worrying when Dom drew a penalty a few minutes later, and Justin Merrum lined up to score his first goal as a Lion, and then did not.
you feel so bad for the man.
You really do. I mean, and he is a guy who, I mean, he's played well in some respects. I mean, he's second on the club in assists with 3, and considering the number of minutes he's played the last few games, that's pretty good. But he's really pressing to get that goal. It took a really weird short run up, which I'd never like for penalties. I just always feel like if you take that longer run up, you sort of give the keeper more time to second guess himself, I guess, you know, maybe
or tip his hand and
or get in his own head, whatever. And you know, so he makes the quick step kick, and you know, I feel like you don't get as much power on it that way either. And he left it too close and kind of up at a good height for the save, and it was not good for Orlando City, because then they made it 3-2 in stoppage time on another Youngworth corner kick goal. From Eriksson's delivery, it was directly onto Youngworth's head, and he headed it in, a free header. So 3-2 the final. It really shouldn't have been that close. It really kind of was shaping up to be one of those games that where really Orlando City could have really built a little bit of goal differential, which would have been nice. But, you know, with the way all the other results were at the end of the game, Orlando City was actually tied for second in the Eastern Conference for a little bit until Atlanta and LA Galaxy played, and LA didn't decide to show up for that game. But it was nice. It was you know, a comfortable win. Like I said, maybe a little bit of nervy at the very end when it was like, oh crap, now it's 3-2 and anything can happen. and for me, that's what I kind of had in the back of my mind, is like, this team has come back three times to draw Orlando City in the last 3 years.
Right.
They can't do it again, can they? Not from three down. And thankfully, the whistle blew, and Orlando City got the victory. And in the end of the day, Otoon with a couple of assists, and he's got four, Dave, on the season in just seven games, and he had four last year. So eight already. He's already more than a third of the way to the 22 that Kaká had in 3 years.
Not surprising. You don't always see, if you're not paying attention, you don't always see what he's doing. And it's like I mentioned earlier, he's one of those engines in the midfield that's feeding the balls in and from distance on a lot of them, which is in his. His service from distance is impressive, but it always has been. That's one of those things that we noticed last season. Mm-hmm. So it shouldn't truly be surprising. I think it's that now there are some outlets up top that are taking advantage of his accuracy on those long balls. And that's, you know, of course, that's going to help his stats. I fully expect this to continue.
Yeah, he had another one too, Mueller, again, that was almost a carbon copy of the first goal, where Mueller took it into the box, and this time he passed and it got cut out. But, you know, that could, again, been an eventual assist. Mm-hmm. You know, he really was amazing, and really didn't see too many poor performances. Again, Aguita was good in that defensive mid role. I thought Will Johnson played really well at right back for you know, Sutter and Allen. Allen was in the 18, but they didn't need to use him, so he got a little bit extra rest. Mm-hmm. It was you know, he got beat for pace by Shea Salinas a few times, but every fullback in the league gets beat at some point for pace, because wingers tend to be speedy. You know, it's like it's just like, you know, wide receivers tend to eventually beat defensive backs at some point because they're fast guys. So Will's not the paciest guy, but I think positionally he was fine. He did get beat for pace a couple of times, but really a hardworking 90 minutes from him. Lamine Sané was amazing at center back. I thought that Amro Tarek had a good game. El Mounir had a good game. It's really hard to pinpoint anybody that didn't play particularly well. I thought maybe, you know, we were seeing some growing pains from Stefano Pino maybe. But other than that, I didn't really see too much wrong with the 11 on the field at any given time.
No, and like you said, with no true chances for them in the run of play, it's obviously the defense was doing their job. We want them to do better on set pieces going forward, which I'm sure Coach Jason Kreis has got them working on this week. But still, as you said, that was a good team effort. You can see that these guys enjoy playing with each other and playing for each other. It is, especially since Dom's gotten back, it is very fun to watch this team come together. And I'm excited going forward, because we still don't have everybody.
Yeah, well, are you tempering your expectations a little bit just right now because of the fact that none of the teams Orlando has beaten in this streak have been like top tier teams? They've all been, like amongst the below the line teams.
Maybe a little bit, but I think that these guys have a confidence and a belief in themselves. And if these teams are the ones that they're supposed to beat, well, they're beating them, after we got Dom back, obviously. I mean, we're talking about a tale of two teams at this point, from the start to the last four. But if they are supposed to beat the teams and they are scoring goals, they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. Will we see something different? Will it be harder when we get to some of the Torontos and the Atlantas? Sure, absolutely. Those are excellent teams. But by the same factor, they're now having that time to play together, to learn each other, to get those passes, to learn tendencies, and they're doing it while winning, which then also gives them confidence and the thought that there's no reason why we can't do this against another team until proven wrong. So, and even then, I don't think this is the type of team, given how they started. They never stopped believing in themselves. The results just weren't coming, and now they are. So I don't think it's going to be a, oh, we lost that, and they're going to revert. I think it's going to be a, oh, we lost that. What can we do to get better?
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, of course, you have to play the schedule you're given, and it is a good thing that maybe the first part of the season when things were not going well from a health perspective and the attack that they weren't playing the better teams, and they've had an opportunity to now start to grow a little bit with some of the guys getting healthy and getting on the field. We finally saw Uri Rossell make his debut. He got a few minutes at the end of the game, so that was nice. But I think this team, we talked about it earlier. I thought they outplayed Minnesota. I thought they outplayed Washington, DC United, and I thought that they just didn't get results in those games. I thought they played a good road game against a very good New York City FC team and held their own and just handed them two goals. So I think that there's definitely something here that can be built upon and will be fun to watch as the season goes on to see where it all ends up and how it comes together and how they handle adversity when it hits, in the dog days of summer. But Dave, let me ask you this. Who was your man of the match?
This one, despite everybody having a good match, this one was easy for me. It's been a week of Mueller at the mainland, and I'm going to have to continue it with a goal that quick, and then making the smart decision to pass to Sasha for the and get that assist, and then just still working hard the entire time. There were plenty of guys who might have been worthy of it. Yotun had an excellent game, but I've got to give it to the youngster. He had a goal and an assist, and he did everything right. So for me, it's got to be Cash.
Yep, influential in the game for sure. We did have a hashtag Mueller Monday at the mainland with everybody deciding to write about him after the game. And Chris Mueller is also my man of the match. Mueller, Mueller, Mueller. We got to get one of those. We got to get a
Yes.
shirt made up for that. But yeah, Chris Mueller's my man of the match for sure. He made the MLS Team of the Week for the first time in his young career. And Yoshimaru Yotun made the bench of the MLS Team of the Week. So congrats to those guys. They weren't the only ones to win, though, over the weekend. The Orlando Pride is off the schneid. I'm rhyming it, and not intentionally, but first victory for the Pride this season, a 1-0 win with a headed goal from Chioma Obogugu off of a set piece from Christine Nairn. Perfect delivery, just needed a touch. It got a touch, it went in the net, it was 1-0. But honestly, Dave, I thought the Pride played a very poor game against a bad Houston Dash team. I don't think that they should have struggled against them. Sidney Leroux hit the post. Alex Morgan got two decent looks at goal, put one over the net just by a little bit, and then on the other one she slipped, it looked like, and skied her shot when she lost her footing. But other than that, not a lot of danger. I think we're continuing to see the absence of all the midfielders be a problem, as the back line is not able to connect well with the attacking line. And I honestly didn't think that 3-4-3 formation that Tom's used the last two games, I didn't think it worked very well against Houston in some respects. But the bottom line is it's a victory. They kept a clean sheet, despite the return of Kalia Ojai. And, the Dash do have a few pretty dangerous, potential goal scorers. So you don't allow a goal, you're putting yourself in a good position. And, of course, the Pride able to hold on and get the win. And now they will get back all those midfielders that have been missing. The Brazilians come back after winning the Copa America Feminina. They have qualified not only for next year's World Cup, but also the 2020 Olympics. So yep. Congratulations to Marta and Poliana and Monica, who had a huge game in the final round. She scored two of their three goals to beat Colombia. So congrats to all of them. Hopefully they'll bring that form back to Orlando. Also, congrats to Camilla, cause she didn't get to play, but she gets to qualify as well, since, she's out with that injury, but she'll be back and, healthy and able to play in the World Cup and, the Olympics the year after. So congrats to all of them. Right there, you're talking about,
that's a lot of quality that has not been on the field.
I mean, just getting Marta back is huge, but Poliana, right back has been an issue. That's why I think Tom went 2-3 at the back, and instead of playing Allie on the right side in a flat four player back line, he sort of did a three person back line and had Kristen Edmonds out there sort of playing wing back, and just didn't seem to get a lot from that, I don't think. And I don't think it really helped Carson Pickett on the left side as well. I don't think that it worked very well at all for whatever reason. Maybe it's because they didn't play it enough in the preseason. Of course, they don't have much of a preseason, but just something just isn't clicking right for the Pride right now. And, of course, the Australians that were missing are both midfielders. Yep. At least the way that they're deployed here. Alana Kennedy has been a midfielder for Orlando, and Emily Van Egmond is one of the better attacking midfielders in women's soccer. So those two Australian internationals were away at the Women's Asian Cup, where they lost a heartbreaker in the final to Japan 1-0 on a very late goal. And it was a struggle for Australia in that tournament overall. They were very good defensively, but they had trouble breaking teams down, or at least finishing when they did break them down. And you don't normally say that about a team like Australia that's got Sam Kerr.
Yeah.
But they didn't score a lot of goals. They didn't score any in the tournament opener against Korea Republic. They almost got knocked out of they almost got knocked to third and had to use a play-in game for the World Cup, but they eventually did get a goal and played very well at the end against Japan. They almost got beat out by I think it was the Philippines that almost beat them, and it was Alana Kennedy's header that sent that to extra time, and then they won it in the penalty shootout to get to the final. So there were a lot of scares for Australia in that tournament, and they were able to sort of navigate their way through almost all of it, but didn't quite have enough to beat Japan for the tournament championship. But they did qualify for the World Cup, so they are in. So congrats to Alana and to Emily, and it will be nice to see both of them in Pride Purple.
Yeah, it'll be great to have them back, the Brazilians back. I think this game was... Every year there are those ugly games that if you can figure out a way to get the win, it's one of those things over the course of the season that you have to do occasionally. This was that match for Orlando. Mm-hmm. they had to make it through one last week without getting everybody back. I think, you know, now that they are, then it's going to – things will start coming together again. You, like we said, we're going to connect the back line to the attack. It will – a lot of things are going to get better. But at the end of the day, if you can get through and get that win, even when you play ugly, that's incredibly important.
It is, and a big congrats to Chi for getting the goal, because honestly, I thought she had a terrible game overall. But, you know, nobody will remember that because she scored the game-winning goal.
You score, that's what they remember.
But I think it's been an ongoing issue for her the last few games, dribbling into blind alleys, trying to pass the ball forward to Morgan or LaRue, and just putting the ball into the feet of the defender directly in front of her. You know, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's rust. I don't know if it's just not making it extra effort to free yourself for to make the pass, to get the angle for the pass, or what it is. But she's just seemed a little bit off, and she's really the only thing that's been connecting, you know, the middle of the field to the attackers, and she's supposed to be one of those attackers. So it kind of throws the whole attack off a little bit when she has to drop it, you know, deeper to get the ball. And then, you know, like, as I said, she's been dribbling into trouble or passing poorly, and it's, you know, and making poor decisions in some of those situations where she tries to do a little too much to get a shot off for herself rather than to set somebody up. But of course, you know, how many passes do you have to have knocked away before you just decide, well, maybe it's just easier if I do it myself. So
I think you hit the nail on the head there. I think she's trying to do too much with everybody that's not there. I think she's trying to maybe take on too much herself, and hopefully once they're back, then that'll ease a bit of burden. She'll be able to relax a little more and hopefully correct those things that you were mentioning.
Mm-hmm. And we've come to find out that Sydney LaRue is the Justin Merrim of the Pride. She will probably never get a better look at goal than she had on Sunday, and she hit the post when she had a whole lot of net to shoot at. So it could have been a more comfortable win for the Pride in the end, but in the end, your first 3 points of the season is usually the hardest one to come by, or the hardest 3 points to come by. But they're on the board. They've got a win. And it's something they can maybe build on as the Seattle Reign come into town this Saturday night at Orlando City Stadium. Now, 90s night on Sunday did not have a great crowd. I'm hoping that's just because it was Sunday. It was late. It wasn't a late game, but it was an evening game. Everybody's getting the kids ready for school, or maybe they went to the beach and they're coming back and they're like, oh, I'm just too tired to go to the game. Whatever it is, not a very good crowd. Less than 4,000 in attendance. The lowest crowd for the Pride since joining the NWSL. So I'm hoping a really good crowd Saturday night. Hopefully everybody you know, is a little bit energized by the win. They're energized by getting the Brazilians and the Australians back.
Exactly.
Being at full strength, and hopefully there'll be a nice crowd at the Purple Palace this weekend. This is a team that deserves nice crowds. And even though it was a poor crowd, it was the third best in the NWSL this weekend. Like another 100 would have made it number two because they would have edged out North Carolina. But still, that's not enough people. Out there and see this team.
It's absolutely not enough people. And I think that the fact that it was the third best and we're sitting here bemoaning the fact that there was less than 4,000, I think that speaks to our expectations given the quality of what the Pride have done over the last couple seasons and how far they've come. And I think you're right. I think it was just a weird weekend. Maybe people don't like the 90s. I don't know. You know, there were some bad things in the 90s. Maybe that held some people out. I think it's probably more that Marta and Camilla and some of the others aren't there. And so, you know, people, yeah, I don't know. Whatever the reason, you're right. Let's start over. Let's get back up there. Let's get some more butts in the seats. And with the Brazilians and the Australians back, let's build on the win. Let's get another one this weekend.
I like it. This is a good one to go see. You know, we've got some. We're welcoming back some old friends, Jasmine Spencer, Steph Catley. with the Seattle Reign. Also, Megan Rapinoe on that team. It's a good team. It's a team that's star-studded. It's should be a good matchup, and
It'll be fun to watch, that's for sure.
it's definitely one of the teams Orlando will need to be competing with to get above the playoff line. So, a very important match early in the season, and a chance for the Pride to get back to 500 on the season. So go out and see it. We will, of course, be back next week to break down the Pride and the Reign, as well as, of course, Orlando City's game, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But before we get to that, we're going to talk to our guest this week. We got another outstanding guest, and we'll get to that interview right after this. All right, joining us on the Mainland Podcast this week, we are pleased to have with us Orlando City defender Amro Tarek. Amro, thanks for being with us on the podcast.
Yeah, sure. It was a pleasure.
So I want to start out by asking you how this season has begun for you. And it's been really crazy with all the different center back combinations that Orlando City's had. You've played with both Jonathan and Lamine, and also there's been people stepping in for you as well, RJ as well. So it's been quite a bit of combinations there. But you guys haven't allowed a goal in the run of play for over 300 minutes. So things seem to be shaping up for you guys.
Yes, I mean, I think we, since the preseason start, we were working so hard. And I think we also getting better and better by time. The only bad thing is we're letting goals from set pieces, but I think it's the whole team is involved in set pieces, not only the defenders. So now we are trying to make it better for the whole team.
Well, speaking of those set pieces, what in particular are you guys working on to try and amend that particular problem?
Yeah, I think set pieces is about, commitment, and really you want to defend the ball. So I think we have to improve in this point. And we were also speaking about this today in the training, and I think in the next games we're going to solve this problem.
Well, that sounds good. We're looking forward to that.
Yes.
Amro, since you've had opportunities to play with both Lamine and Jonathan Spector, can you just tell us what it's like to play with the two of them? What do they do that's similar, and how are they different on the field?
As you said, I think it's really great to play next to them. They are both very experienced players, and they played also on a very high level in Europe. So for me, it feels good. I feel good with both of them. They are a little bit similar for me, the way they play. So I'm really happy to play next to them.
Now, you talk about them playing in Europe. Obviously, you've played quite a few places yourself. Give us your impressions of Orlando, the supporters, and the atmosphere at Orlando City Stadium.
Yeah, I really think the atmosphere here is really amazing. So I was in Columbus before, and it's really, really a big difference than Columbus. Here, the fans they really love the club, and they are always behind us. So I think it's something very important for the players, because sometimes we feel it's a commitment to make these people feel happy and to keep supporting us for a reason. So I think it's very good opportunity for us to have these kind of supporters.
Now, you mentioned playing in Columbus before, and that's a few years ago. So not a lot of time passed, but some time has passed since you played last in MLS. What is different about Major League Soccer now from the first time you were here?
It's like in the past years, not only when I was in Columbus, like people look at the Major League Soccer, it's only, you know, the league for big stars to retire there and to relax, you know, no stress.
Mm-hmm.
But the league has really changed, like year by year, it becomes very, very strong. And as you see, in each team, you could find like a minimum 3-4 international players that it says that it's a very good league. And I think now all people all over the world are knowing that the league is very good.
Having been here in Orlando for a little bit, tell me about how you're adjusting, what you're finding to be, you know, most interesting, most challenging.
Can you repeat the question, please?
Yeah, now that you've been in Orlando for a little while, what aspects are you finding either on the field or off to be more challenging or, you know, more fun? You know, how are you finding, you know, being in Orlando?
Yeah, like in the team, I'm really having fun with my teammates, like in training, in the games. It's really fun for me. And when I have like day offs, we go also outside. I go with Justin, with Muhammad, with Lamin. So I'm really having fun here and I'm enjoying my time.
Now, one of the things that we don't get a lot of here is we don't get a lot of exposure to, you know, soccer in some parts of the world where you've played. For example, Egypt, we don't have any kind of feeling for really the flavor of what that's like. How different is playing in the United States to playing in Egypt? Are the atmospheres completely different? Are they similar? What is it like down there?
I can tell you it's completely different than Egypt. Like in Egypt, people are crazy about soccer. We call it football there. The mm-hmm. people are really crazy about it. And it's the only thing that all the Egyptians follow. It's the only thing that all the Egyptians agree about, like all like soccer. So here it's, I know that soccer is not the first sport in America. So the people are not so interested. So like in Egypt, if you're a famous soccer player, you just can't walk in the street like normal person, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But here it's, I think it's a little bit different, which is good.
Well, speaking of famous Egyptian football players, and this is kind of timely, I'm certain that you watched Champions League earlier. Now, you probably don't know, I happen to be a Liverpool fan. Michael happens to be a Roma fan. But I want to get your impressions of Mo Salah and the season he's having.
Yeah, he's an incredible player. As you see, now he's one of the best players in the world. It's not my opinion, it's his numbers and what he's doing in each game in the Premier League, in Champions League, with the Egyptian national team. Like, he leads the national team to join the World Cup after 28 years, so which is something really great. And I think it makes us, all the Egyptians, proud to have a player like him.
Now,
he's a great person as well.
Amro, I wanted to just ask you how you ended up in Orlando. Like, what is the story of you playing in Egypt, that's the beginning, and then it ends with you putting on a purple shirt in Orlando. How did that go? Who reached out to you and expressed interest? Was it through your agent? Did somebody come to see you play, a scouting for Orlando City? How did that happen?
It was after my national team appearance last March. Like in the summer after, some agents contacted me here from America, and they told me if I'm interested to come back to MLS. And, you know, it was always in my mind to come back after I left Columbus, mm-hmm. because I really liked the league. So I told them, yes, I would like to come. So we agreed we're going to find something for me in the beginning of the season in America, which means it's in winter in Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
So they contact, I give them my agent contact, and they contacted her. And yeah, they told me Orlando, they are interested. They watched some games and they are interested in me. That's the story.
Well, we're glad you're here. So obviously I'm sure that you have the team goal of getting to the playoffs just like everybody else. What I'm curious about is if you have any individual goals for yourself as a player this season.
Yes, it's not only my goal to make the playoffs. I think with this team, we could win also some trophies. We have a very good team this season. And I was sure about this since the preseason. In the beginning of the season, we had hard times, but inside of me, I was really sure that we were doing good. And my other goal is to be with my national team in the World Cup.
Now, one of the things we've seen, obviously 4 wins in a row, which is great, but there's still room for this team to get better and better. Obviously, we mentioned the set pieces earlier in the interview here, but also, you know, Justin Merrim's not quite, you know, clicking on all cylinders just yet. You know, Josue Coleman still not quite where we expect him to be in a few weeks. Jonathan's been out with injuries. What percentage do you think this team is right now from 100% being, you know, as good as it can play? Where do you think this team is right now?
As you said, you just mentioned agreed players are not fit right now, or we didn't get to play a lot of minutes. About Justin, I don't agree with you, because I see Justin is doing great. Like, he has 3 assists. He really helped the team, just about to get his first goal. I don't think it's something he should worry about, because he's helping the team. Last game, he come in, his first pass is a wonderful through ball to Dom Dwyer. And I think this is really good that we all, as teammates, when Justin has the ball or when Justin is on the pitch, we really trust him and we know that he could do something for us. About Josue, I think he didn't play a single game in the preseason, and this is something very, very difficult for him. So I think step by step, he would be very important for us. So as you said, there are some players are not really fit now, and we're doing good. So I think when they are back, we'll be much, much stronger.
Right. Do you think this team, though, is like at – where do you think they are? Do you think you guys are at 50% of your you know, your total potential? Do you think you're at 70%? Where do you think that, you know, you guys fall right now?
I can't tell you the percent exactly, but I think it's important for any successful team to have the players who are able to put the team in success, like to win games. So we can't affect by 2 or 3 players if they are injured or if they are not fit, so our team get affected. No, if we want to be successful, I think we should have like all the players in the team very strong and can help the team.
Okay.
Now, other than the players, obviously, you know, you're playing for Jason Kreis. Tell me about, you know, your impressions of him as a coach, what you've, you know, noticed since you've been in Orlando, and whether there's you know, things you like, things you don't like. You know, give us your impressions of Jason.
You don't mean to tell you things I don't like about my coach?
It's my job to ask these things.
No, it's really, as you can see, he's really a very good coach. And even when we had the bad results, but our statistics were very good. Our style of playing was to play football, to start from behind and to control the game. And which I think is something very good for the supporters and for Orlando City fans to see that the team are able to play football, real football. And that's my opinion, you know, about him. And I think this is something good. I enjoy doing this. I enjoy doing this with him, like to play a good football.
Well, Amro, before we let you go, I want to know when you score your first goal for Orlando City, what can we expect from the celebration? What are we going to see?
It's going to be a surprise.
Are you going to surprise us? Will it be a surprise to just us, or will it also be a surprise to you?
no, it's gonna be a surprise for just you guys. I know what I'm going to do.
Okay, fair enough.
We look forward to it.
Yeah, for sure. Amro Tarek, defender for Orlando City. Thanks so much for being with us. It's been great talking to you. We wish you luck with the rest of the season. All right, take care now.
Thank you so much.
All right, as we head into stoppage time for episode number 122 of the Mainland Podcast, definitely want to thank once again Amro Tarek of Orlando City and one of the newer defenders on the club. He is he's been doing a good job, Dave, and I think that he may have misunderstood. I wasn't saying that Justin Merrill's not playing well. I'm saying that he's just struggling to break down that barrier in front of the net and start pouring in those goals like we know he can.
Well, you know, when you come to this country and it's not your native tongue, I think he did pretty well. And as long as he keeps doing what he's doing on the field, who cares if he answers our questions the right way?
Well, I mean, he's not completely new to this country by any stretch of the imagination. I mean,
no.
He is, in fact, not in addition to having played in Ohio, which you don't get much more white bread, middle America than Ohio. And I can say that because I'm from Ohio.
Because you're from there. That's right.
But also birthplace for Amro Tarek is Los Angeles. So that's almost like an American city right there.
From what I understand, it is, although I haven't been myself, so I can't confirm or deny on a personal level.
Okay. Anyway, it was great to talk to him, and thanks, big thanks to Rafa Cabrera from the Orlando City Communications staff for shrugging off his dental visit and setting up that interview for us today. We really appreciate that. Good interview, and now we will roll, Dave, into the Ask the Mainland Podcast segment of our show. That, of course, is where we do our answering of anything that people want to know. And why don't you tell folks how they can ask us literally anything?
So just get on the Twitter machine and at the Mainland, you would use the hashtag AskTMLPC. That's AskTMLPC. Mm-hmm. And it will, Michael and I, and we will see it and make a note of it and then answer it once we get on the podcast. You can also email us @themainland@gmail.com, and we will answer it there as well.
Indeed we will, because we are not too shy to get on there and just answer anything that people want to know. Doesn't have to be about soccer. It could be about anything. We're not just people that just stay in one lane our whole lives. We have a wide array of knowledge that we can call upon.
We are worldly and we are worldly gentlemen who I give up. I tried.
Yeah, you were overselling it anyway.
I was.
Anyhow, we do have some folks who have asked us anything, and let's get to those. We want to talk about Frank on Twitter. Frank would like to know, is not liking IPAs the sign of an unfit mind? Dave, what is your take?
I am an IPA aficionado. However, that being said, I can't say that it's a person with an unfit mind, because there are plenty of other fine types of brews out there to have. There are, I have a poster that's got them all, and I can't even, we would be here forever if I named them between all the lagers and pilsners and ales and stouts and lambics and everything else. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that it's necessarily an unfit mind. I might disagree with a person that isn't at least willing to do that. But then again, my dad doesn't like IPAs, and I love him. So, well, now it might be debatable if he's in his right mind or not, but that's completely separate from whether he likes IPAs or not.
Okay.
So no, I think you can absolutely be okay and not like IPAs.
Yeah, I think there's just so many kinds of beer. There's something for everybody, and I will never, you like what you like. Basically, you can't really you can't really, it's not a conscious decision to like or dislike things in terms of taste. You know, that's, everybody's just wired differently. That's why some people like Monets and some people like Picassos. You know, it's just not one size fits all. But some people like, I've kind of come to the part of my life where I can enjoy really any style of beer, and it all kind of comes down to what mood I'm in more than anything, what I want to drink. It's not
very true.
Like, there was a time in my life I couldn't drink any heavy beers. I couldn't drink stouts. I couldn't drink porters. Didn't like them. Didn't like anything about them. But now those are probably my two favorite styles of beer. And again, it comes down to what you're in the mood for, what kind of like, what's your environment? Is it a hot day? Like, if you're
right, I was going to say time of the year.
If you're having a lunch outside on a hot day, you probably don't want something heavy. You might want something a little lighter, and
a nice pilsner.
Yeah. So an IPA might not be what you go for there. And I know a lot of people don't like the bitterness of the hops of IPAs. But then again, too, the other thing I say is, if you say you don't like IPAs, maybe you haven't tried the right IPA.
That's a very good point, because there are many types. There's West Coast, there's New England style, you've got double, you've got imperial. There are so many, and there's so many different types of hops that they can use between Cascade and Mosaic. So you're right. If you're not sure, there are plenty of places that you can go try different beers at, get flights, or even just they'll give you the little tasting cups. Mm-hmm. I happen to be lucky enough to be in the town that – so every state has a beer bar that won best beer bar for that state. I'm fortunate that I happen to live in Tallahassee, where Growler Country, that I've been going to for years, won – best beer bar for the state of Florida. So lucky me. You have World of Beer, which I don't have. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but I guarantee it, somewhere in your town there is craft beer to be had, and whoever is working there is going to be very happy to walk you through the process. And heck, some of the patrons will probably be happy to walk you through the process and tell you the things that they like and they don't like and give descriptions. Yeah, they shouldn't have asked us this, because you and I, we could do a whole separate podcast about beer.
Absolutely. But yeah, my advice, Frank, is to go try as many different styles and as many different makes as you can, and you'll find something you like. It might even be an IPA. So, but might no, be. There's nothing necessarily wrong with you if that's not your favorite style of beer. So. I'm glad we could get to the bottom of that, and I'm glad we could put your mind at ease. It's not.
I'm glad that Frank gave us the opportunity to finally talk about beer. We've been asking people to ask a beer question for months.
Now, that said, we don't know you, Frank, so we're not saying that you don't have an unfit mind. We're just saying that liking IPAs is not the sign of one.
Correct. Like my father, you could be completely mentally unfit. We don't know. Yeah.
All right. Alex Motes from Twitter has asked us a question. Luckily, we got this because he did not use the correct hashtag. He used AskTML, and it's AskTMLPC. So that's your hashtag. But we got
it
anyway. Yeah, we got it. He says Jason Kreitz tweets after every match with the hashtag trust the process. What do you think is that process, and does it involve a designated player riding the bench? Dave, you want to take this first?
Sure. I think the process is so I'm going to back up a little bit. Up here in Tallahassee, prior to Jimbo Fisher leaving for Texas A&M, he had the process where it was everything from facilities to how they ate to how they practiced, all those things. And I am guessing that's exactly what Jason is talking about. The process is everything from when they go to bed to when they get up to, you know, the what they're eating to how they travel, all of that. So I think what he's trying to say when he's tweeting that out is it's a long season where we know the things that we have to work on, and our end goal is the same that the supporters want, and that's to make the playoffs and ultimately win championships. And that he as a coach and they as a coaching staff have a method to their madness or method to their non-madness, and he's hoping that without spelling it out for everybody, because if you have to, it's going to take up those all those characters in a tweet. So instead, just trust the process.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty common, you know, saying from college football coaches and even pro football coaches, trust the process. I know that Nick Saban has used it, Bill Belichick, a lot of people have used it. I think he just means that the process is, you know, they're building something, they're putting it in a piece at a time, they're getting everybody healthy, and it's going to come together at some point the way they would like it to. And it's not done that yet, but it's on the way to doing that. So he's saying, you know, just kind of chill and let this thing kind of play its way out and everybody be happy at the end of the day. I think that's what he means. The reference to leaving a DP on the bench, I think that Jason Christ is like any other coach. He wants to put the 11 on the field that gives him the best opportunity to win. And so if that means Cole Mon has to ride the bench and come off the bench and be useful in other ways, you know, then that's the way it's going to be. The great thing about young DPs is it's not as big a cap hit as the regular DP. And it's also, you know, what you would use to tag a player that, you know, you have a long range goal to develop that mm-hmm. player. You know, that's what it's for. So, you know, I think Coleman will get there. I don't think he's there yet. I don't think there's any – I think in some ways he's playing too fast and too impatiently, and mm-hmm. he's not quite on the same page as everybody else yet. So I don't think there's any shame that he's on the bench. He's still getting minutes, and, you know, at some point he – I mean, it's a long season. He's going to be needed at times. His contributions will become vital, and he'll have to step up and play, and hopefully by that point he'll be ready to do just that. So,
additionally, we talked about Mueller, and you know, there's a well-known saying in sports of ride the hot hand or hot foot on this in this game, and you know, the kid's scoring, so guess what? You're going to put him out there, and if that means that Coleman's on the bench to start, well, then that's what that means. You know, when we get different guys back and or, you know, maybe we switch formations because of a team we're playing, you're going, like you said, you're going to see Coleman out there. He's going to get minutes. I also think it goes back to a lot of what Jason sees in practice. He's going to put the guys out there that are going to give the team the best chance to bring home the win.
Yeah, and it's, you know, exactly right. I mean, it's one thing if the team was struggling, but the team's been getting wins, so there's absolutely no reason to, you know, demand any changes in the lineup or anything. Mueller scored goals in 3 straight games. That's the guy who's playing Coleman's position right now, so you know, it's not like Kleshin has been playing poorly or anything. And, you know, I mean, even an established MLS star like Justin Merrim is coming off the bench recently. So I think that's the beauty of this lineup, is that this is a team yeah. that's deep enough that you can have Justin Merrim come in the 60th minute or 70th minute of a soccer game. So, I mean, enjoy it. We're not
right.
not used to this level of depth on the team. So, thank you for your question, and hopefully next time, if you have another question, hopefully you will ask it, and you will ask it with the correct hashtag AskTMLPC. I'm not trying to be pedantic, but I tried to use AskTML, and it was being used for something else, and I didn't want to confuse anybody or sort of infringe upon an existing hashtag, so I came up with the adding the PC at the end. For podcast, which is actually just one word, but you know what it means.
It's already a thing at this point. Just deal with it and go with it.
It's our thing, in fact. Yes. We got a question in the email.
All right.
So Lee wants to know, you know, he's talking about the new stadium in the Bronx that's being rumored for New York City FC. And he says, you know, if it comes to fruition, do you ever foresee New York Red Bulls undergoing another rebranding like when they were the Metro Stars, they later became the Red Bulls, and now with a team having its own stadium in the Bronx, wouldn't it be simultaneously seem laughable and self-loathing for the Red Bulls to pretend they still represent New York City as opposed to accepting their lot in New Jersey. I'll go first on this one, I guess. I don't see a rebranding in the future of New York Red Bulls until the company decides to sell the team. I don't think they'll rebrand to New Jersey. I don't foresee that happening, even though they play in Harrison, New Jersey. I don't think the fact that, you know, that is that one team is in New York and one team's not is going to affect them. Shea Stadium was the former home of the Jets, with the Giants being in New Jersey. You know, now they're both out of the city, but there used to be one in the city and one out of the city. So, you know, I don't think that that sort of argument holds any water either way. You know, saying he says in his email, the Giants and Jets claiming New York doesn't hold water because neither of them actually plays in the city. But, you know, Shea was in New York Stadium, as far as I know. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I don't think so. I don't see any way that they wouldn't sort of claim New York and decide to just concede the city of New York to New York City FC. These upstarts with the, you know, with the oil money, you know, Manchester City Light. I don't think there's any way that they just give up and say, okay, you can have New York City. What do you think, Dave?
Yeah, there's absolutely no way. Nobody is giving up the New York City moniker. It's not going to happen. There's a long, as he mentioned, with Jets, Giants, et cetera, there is a long history of teams ignoring the fact that they're in Jersey and going with New York. It's just how it is. As far as, you know, new stadium, Red Bulls, not Red Bulls, you know, I don't see that unless – like you said, the team gets sold, then that's not happening either. So it's get used to it. No matter what happens on stadiums or locations or anything like that, they are New York Red Bulls and for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, and I think also if we've learned anything from the New England Revolution and from David Beckham, it's that just because there's a stadium rumor doesn't mean you're going to get a stadium.
Very true.
Yeah. Anyway, we do appreciate, Lee, your questions, and we invite everybody to ask us a question. Did we get one from Mark this week?
You know, I, as many know, Mark Johnson is a law student, and I'm anticipating that he was incredibly busy this week, and that because he didn't even, well, I guess he did text me this morning about the Champions League thing, but he must have gotten busy this afternoon because he decided not to participate this week, and I know he's going to listen when this drops, so shame on you, Mark Johnson.
So we do actually have one more question here, I think.
Dang it!
Yeah, it came in on the 19th, and this is from Ryan Smith. He wants to know, he says, you're Kyle Larin sitting on a derby match bench, then all hell breaks loose. How bummed are you that you left an informed Orlando City now? Fenerbahce versus Besiktas abandoned due to fan unrest and manager issues. Of course, there was a big dust-up. And what a shock that this has happened in Turkish soccer. What a shock that something eventful all happened in a Turkish soccer match. That's crazy. That never happens.
Never.
You know, I think Kyle's probably I think genuinely Kyle probably does wish that the club well. I think honestly he did have a connection with the fans here, even though in many ways he's burned that bridge. So I don't think that he's really necessarily wanting to see anything bad happen here. And on the other side of it, I think he's probably fine with whatever happens here every time he looks at his bank account.
Yeah, I think he's probably okay in that regard. And he, right or wrong of how he went about it, this is what he wanted to do. He wanted to get over international. He is. And so I think he's probably the type of guy that has said, this was the decision I've made. And until something better comes along, he's going to ride it. So I agree with you that he doesn't wish any, you know, ill will towards Orlando. As a matter of fact, he's probably enjoying this 4-win streak, even if he's not saying anything about it. I can't imagine that he's not you know, still following and paying attention. I'm sure he is. The only thing I would say, it's amazing the impact that he had, good and I guess bad, in that here we are months later and somebody's still asking about what Kyle Larin thinks. When we've got, you know, Dom Dwyer and Chris Mueller scoring goal after goal, and somebody's still like, hey, what about Kyle Larin? You know what? Kyle did a lot of great things for us, and I wish him well, but we got another guy that can maybe get Rookie of the Year if he keeps this form going. I'm not predicting that in any sense, but I'd rather look. Let's look forward. Let's look at what we've got now and wish Kyle all the best, and hope that, you know, he stays out of nastiness over there abroad.
Yeah, I mean, the bottom line is he's a young player who's chasing his dream. His dream was to go play in Europe and play for a Champions League team. I mean, he's realized that now. He's not, you know, first team material. I mean, he's not first choice striker, but he's doing what he set out to do. He's reached a goal in his life. And who among us would not want to do that? Who among us, even when we were young, would not maybe have even cut a corner to have done that? So,
certainly,
you know, I we don't necessarily like the way he left. The club certainly didn't like the way he left. It's possible that it actually cost the club money. But at the end of the day, I'm not going to belittle somebody who, you know, did what they thought was right to get what they wanted out of life, because life is short and, you know, you never know what happens. I mean, if he, let's say he comes back to Orlando City and the plan is to sell him in the summer. What if he rips up his knee and is never the same again? I mean, you gotta take all that into account. I mean, it's the same thing when people get bent out of shape when their favorite college football player or basketball player leaves early to go pro. It's they're making a decision based on, you know, many factors, and they're making the right decision for themselves and the, you know, based on their thought process and weighing all the pros and cons, and that's just the way it is. And someone else's life is they're never going to make the choices you would necessarily make, because they're different people with different experiences and, you know, different socialization and all of that. So everybody's different. We're all unique snowflakes. And Kyle is a Canadian snowflake that decided to go to Turkey, and good luck to him.
Absolutely.
All right. But thanks for your question, Ryan. And, you know, it is kind of fun to make fun of people who have wronged your team, I guess. But at the same time, realistically, I don't want to escalate that kind of thing. It's just, will I chuckle every time, you know, Beşiktaş loses? Sure. But at the same time, you know, I'm not going to belittle somebody who made a decision that they thought was right for them, because we all make decisions in life, and sometimes they turn out to be the wrong ones. Sometimes they turn out to be the right ones. And, you know, I firmly believe that you usually end up in life where you're supposed to be.
Oh, crap.
It's pretty deep.
Man.
Yeah. You ended up in Tallahassee, Dave. I'm sorry, but that's where you're meant to be. But at least you got the growler bar.
That's true. So, you know, way to look on the positive.
Exactly. All right, that'll do it for Ask the Mainland Podcast. Get those hashtags in on Twitter. Hashtag AskTMLPC. Make sure you include our at the Mainland in your tweet so that we will see it. Otherwise, you know, we have to go hunting for it by searching the hashtag. Or you can email us at themainland@gmail.com, and hopefully we'll soon, don't know when, have a new email address, which is a little more officially business sounding. But that's how you do it for now. Thanks for everybody getting in those questions. Dave, before we go, Orlando City going back on the road this week, where it's very difficult to win, and it's extremely difficult to win when you can't breathe. And Orlando City is going to be playing a mile high up in Dick's Sporting Good Park against the Colorado Rapids this weekend on Sunday. How do you see this shaking out as far as the key matchup of the game? And let's get your match prediction.
Wow. So, key matchup is funny enough, key matchup is Orlando City versus the altitude and how well they can make it through 90 minutes. I think that the team is coming together. I think that, you know, the defense is there, especially in the run of play. I think that they're scoring goals. I think that they're getting, you know, good play out of the midfield. I think all of that's coming together. But like you said, Mile High, that can be difficult. For any of you that have traveled out west, I know one time when I went out and I knew I was going to be a, you know, 10,000 feet or so, I went out 2 days early just to acclimatize because we live in Florida and most of us are at zero or negative altitude. Mm-hmm. So that's, I think, how they can do against the altitude and or with making substitutions at the right time to allow the team to maintain a good pace. I think that's actually one of the toughest things for this particular road game. As far as my prediction, I want so badly for the win streak to continue, but it's notoriously hard to win on the road. I'm going to go 1-1, and that's despite a Colorado team that is seems to be all over the place themselves. Beat Philly, draw with Dallas, beat Toronto, but then lose to, you know, Real Salt Lake. So I'm going to go 1-1 just because I think that early on we can probably get a goal. I just hope that we can hold on and keep it at a draw.
All right. Well, you know, that's actually what I was going to say as my key matchup, but I'm not going to say it now. I'm going to go a different way. Yeah, that's, I mean, it's, here's the thing about Colorado. They're 2-2-2, but they're 2-0-1 at home because that is a big home field advantage that they have up there. They seem to be playing better of late, but again, at home they're a much different team than they are on the road, just because of their, you know, they're being used to those types of elements. And one thing that's interesting is Tim Howard got red carded over the weekend, and unless that's overturned, he's out. So we will see a different goalkeeper, Zach McMath, likely the goalkeeper. They also have Andrew Dykstra on their supplemental roster, so he might be on the bench for that game. So maybe the key matchup is Justin Merrim against Zach McMath.
I like it.
Justin Merrim is overdue. I think that, you know, it's, you look at the form that Dwyer and Mueller have been in, but I mean, how long can you keep a streak going? So I feel like, you know, it's a tall ask for those guys to keep their streaks going another game. So somebody else has to probably step up. Maybe that's going to be Justin Merrim. I think he might be back in the starting lineup this week. So I think that really comes down to, can Justin Merrim finally break his drought and put the ball in the net? And I think that's going to be a potential key factor there. The elements certainly will be an issue. Like I said, 2-0-1 Colorado at home, 0-2-1 on the road. So it's just very difficult to go there and come away with points. I also see this as a 1-1 draw. The other big matchup for me too is the whole team against the whole team on set pieces.
Yes,
because that's been a problem area, and they've gone more than 3.5 games without giving up a goal in the run of play. And if they can continue that streak, they have a very good chance of coming away with at least 1 point from the road. It would be nice though to get this as a win, because not only is it a tough place to play, but it would give them 5 in a row, which would be the longest winning streak in the league this year, and I believe tie them for their all-time high MLS win streak. So that would be, it would be nice to be able to capture that. It's certainly a winnable game, but they cannot leave it till late, because they won't have the legs or the lungs late to come from behind.
Correct.
They absolutely have to jump on top and then hang on when their bodies start to fail them later in that game. So Anyway, I think it'll be an interesting game. I would certainly like all 3 points. I will be accepting very much of one. We'll see how it goes. We'll be back to break that down next week on this very program, as well as the Pride's hosting of Seattle Reign and anything that comes up between here and there. I don't have an injury report update to report at this time. Actually, I meant to check in with some folks, but I didn't get to do that today. I just had a big meeting, and it was just, you know, life and actual work that pays. Work that pays got in the way.
Right. I was going to say, quick reminder, podcast listeners, we have other jobs.
Yeah, we have real jobs. So I wasn't able to get an update. I don't expect that Spectre would make this trip. You know, based on the altitude and everything, I think they probably would rather just give him another week, even if he's passes the protocol, which I to this point has not, as far as I know. Don't know what Sutter's availability will be. Of course, RJ Allen was back on the bench last week, so he should be fine. And of course, Yuri Rosell was in the lineup. So mostly it looks like they're healthy unless somebody picks up a knock this week in training. And I expect that they'll go out and they'll play with high energy, and hopefully they'll start the game well, because if they, again, if they fall behind, that's going to be a, I mean, it's Colorado cliche. It'd be a mountain to climb, hopefully they won't have to do that. So it's very important they finish chances, and I really hope that Justin Merrim scores. I don't know if he will. I don't know if he'll start. I kind of expect that will happen. I'm perfectly okay with it if Dom and Chris want to keep their streaks going, though.
Yeah, just absolutely. In case. the one thing we can know for sure is that it won't be 1-1.
Well, yeah, because we both predicted.
Because we both predicted, yeah. Exactly. So that's, yeah. Go ahead. You can take that to Vegas.
Yeah. Go to Vegas and say, I want to bet on anything except 1-1.
And see if they let you do it.
I don't know what kind of odds you get there, but anyway, that will do it for episode 122 of the Mainland Podcast. Again, thank you to Amro Atarek and to Rafa Cabrera of the Orlando City Communications Department. We will be back next week to break down Orlando City at Colorado Rapids, Seattle Reign at Orlando Pride, anything else that comes up between now and then. And of course, you can please get your questions, ask us anything, on Twitter or on via email, themainland@gmail.com. Once again, read our stuff at themainland.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or subscribe to this very podcast, and tell all your friends about it as well. And if you leave a 5-star review along with your 5-star rating, we will read your written review of this podcast right here on the air. So nobody's done that in a few months, so
and we really want to do it.
Yeah, we want to. So, you know, if you don't think we're worth 5 stars, well then I don't know what. I'm gonna wash my hands of you.
Yeah, that's then there's something obviously unfit about your brain.
What do you want, our blood?
No, they really don't. I promise you that they don't. They don't want that.
Well, maybe they're vampires. I don't know who listens to this podcast.
Well, even if they're vampires, they probably don't want our blood.
Well, it'll have a lot of beer in it.
It will have a lot of beer in it.
All right. On behalf of David Rowe up in Tallahassee, I'm Michael Citro, the founder and managing editor of themainland.com, signing off the way I always do by saying, go City and go Pride.